Dubai Eye
103.8. The big story of the morning is the ongoing situation over in Sri Lanka. So what do we know so far? At least 138 people have been killed. We're told that over 400 are injured following explosions in Sri Lanka, according to hospital officials. Three churches, three hotels, all targeted across the country and hit in a near simultaneous blast earlier today on Easter Sunday. One of the explosions ripped through St. Anthony's Shrine in the capital of Colombo, causing casualties amongst worshippers there. The three hotels in Colombo that have been affected are the Shangri-La, the Kingsbury and the Cinnamon Grand. We have news coming through in the last few minutes as well that nine foreigners are among the 47 dead at a national hospital. 47 confirmed dead in one of the national hospitals. This according to one of the lead surgeons there, adding that they alone were treating 200 for wounds in that particular hospital. But of the 47 confirmed dead in one hospital in Colombo, nine of those are said to be foreigners. We're going to bring you more details on this particular event over there in due course. Comments coming through, Zina Zalameh, from across the country and across the world as well.
Yes, so I'm on Twitter and a lot of people have been on, are on holiday there actually. A lot of people say, I'm currently here in Sri Lanka. Don't let these events influence you. This country is wonderful, deserves so much. After 28 years of war, they managed to raise up tourism. 60% of money is from tourism. Don't cancel your trips, y'all. Let's support this country. Please share this. So a lot of people on holiday, they're saying, don't let this put you off. Visit Sri Lanka because the country needs you more than ever.
Australian PM's also been taken to Twitter to condemn the devastating and horrific Easter terrorist attacks on innocents. He has just posted that one in the last few minutes, as has the Mayor of London, Sajid Javid, amongst others. So we'll keep an eye on all of these for you. Paper review, though, today. And obviously, this is one of the stories we will keep an eye on, and I'm sure she's keeping an eye on it as well. Senior reporter at Khaleej Times is Sawa Nasir, joins us live here in studio. Sawa, we've got to open up with this, your reactions to the Sri Lanka bombings. An awful way to start a Sunday, to start a new week here in the UAE. Thanks very much indeed for joining us.
Good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me. Yes, the day started off with very bad news, terrible events that unfolded today in Sri Lanka. It's a beautiful country, and it happened on Easter Sunday as well when people were going for their prayers. More than 137 people reported dead, more than 400 wounded. Mm. It's tragic. There's about 250,000 Sri Lankan expats that live here as well. A lot of expats here that go to holidays to Sri Lanka. I've been there. It's a beautiful country. And I hope people do keep visiting there. And authorities there are, I think, about to hold emergency meetings to discuss what happened, how the events unfolded.
It is difficult, isn't it? I suppose what makes it all the more difficult for people to come to terms with here is the fact that there is such close links between the UAE and Sri Lanka. Geographically, they're very close. We have seen a huge upward trend in people heading to Sri Lanka for their holidays, for their breaks, for weekends, long weekends away even at the moment. It's become a real hotspot for residents here in the UAE who can see their dirham go a lot further over in Sri Lanka. My family were there just, you know, 6-7 days ago, as I'm sure a number of families listening in will attest to for this time of year. And given the fact that people will be conscious of the areas that were hit, now more so than three hotels in the heart of Colombo, that makes it all the more difficult to come to terms with.
Right. And the sad part is Sri Lanka has been investing so much in tourism.
Yeah.
It's been trying to attract so many tourists. Just recently, it announced that they'll be giving a visa on arrival for Indian and Pakistani citizens. That just shows how it's trying to attract tourists into the country. There's so many tourism companies here as well that offer packages for Sri Lanka because that's how popular the destination is. Of course, like you mentioned, geographically, it's very close to the UAE as well. There's a lot of hotspots in Sri Lanka that people like going to. So hopefully this specific event, even though as tragic as it is, hopefully does not affect tourism there as well in the long run.
Yeah, I sort of understand that sentiment. It's a difficult one, isn't it? Because one understands fundamentally that this, in events like this, is when a country like Sri Lanka or others that are impacted by attacks need that tourism spend. They need the support of the global community to come together. But you can't, that there is always going to be an element of doubt, certainly for the next couple of weeks until we get to the bottom of why these attacks occurred. There's always going to be an element of doubt amongst tourists.
Right. And I think a lot of, embassies usually do issue out a travel warning at events like this.
Yeah.
So it, definitely there is going to be a hesitancy amongst tourists who were looking to go to Sri Lanka but now might change their minds. And that's unfortunate considering, you know, it was only from 1983 to 2000, dates might be wrong,
but
the Civil War ended.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we have this that's happened, and it's really just devastating for the country.
We will keep an eye on it. I know it's a very fluid situation, so we're just trying to monitor those details along with the RN News there. So stay tuned for more on that. Let's get to some of the stories that Sawat has gone with for today's paper reviews. We start with her and Brian Kalish Times. And one of the stories that was published as part of your two-week anti-littering campaign. Tell me more.
Right. So we have a campaign called KT for Good that's been running since January. And we've been publishing different topics around communities. So we started off with a campaign for road safety that kicked off in January. And right now we're writing about anti-littering, and there's been a huge response from our residents who've been engaging with us on social media as well. It's about covering different topics around littering in the country. So we kicked off with cigarette butt littering in the country. And some of the shocking figures that we found were in 2017, authorities collected 400,000 cigarette butts just off Dubai beaches. That's a lot. That's nearly 500,000 cigarette butts off Dubai beaches. And then we covered about, obviously, the massage card littering that happens in the country. This is not new, but what's new is the fact, it's not new, but a lot of residents maybe don't know that cleaners are spending more than 8 hours collecting 50,000 massage cards from just one community in Dubai. And if you combine two communities such as Barsha and Barsha Heights, they're collecting 100,000 massage cards daily. So we went out
every day.
This is according to the cleaners. I have them on video, and we did a print story as well where they're talking about how they go every single day to these same communities and they're picking up just massage cards for 8 hours. So that's quite interesting. We also took a poll, a Khalid Times poll, where we asked residents, what do they do with the massage cards that they find on their cars? Do they throw them away or do they just throw them on the ground? I was shocked to learn that more than half of the respondents, we had 5,000 people who replied to the poll, nearly half of the respondents said they do throw them on the ground. Obviously, it is frustrating that they find them on their car in the first place, which is not supposed to be happening. But the cleaners have said, hey, make our jobs easier, just throw them in the bin, even if you do find them.
It's such a strange story, isn't it? Because you'd think that, given the initiatives that are in place here in a city like this, how it's even tolerated to this day. I mean, it's something that I'm assuming authorities would be able to clamp down on more vigorously if there was that sort of initiative put in place. Or is it a case of these fly tippers are issuing these cards very surreptitiously? I mean, I can take you to car parks. I'm sure you could take me to car parks where we can see this process going on.
Right. Well, they do it. There has been a lot of events where these distributors have been arrested. Authorities crack down on these illegal centers where they are offering illegal services and they send out distributors to hand out these cards. There has been a number of people that have been arrested, but the problem obviously continues. And I think what happens here really is if you do find a massage card, authorities do encourage you to report it. Even if you see the person that is handing it out, if you spot it, you are actually encouraged to call authorities.
Sure.
So they can come and, speak to the guy, arrest possibly. Because it is a you know, you can be prosecuted for doing that. There's been signs put up as well saying that distribution of promotional items are illegal and you can be prosecuted.
Fake news. Let's talk about the scourge of fake news, something that all of us keep an eye out for. But this is interesting because it's now sort of making its way into educational curriculums for all the right reasons, that is.
Right. So this is for IB schools in the UAE. There's thousands of kids that attend IB schools here. The board has actually introduced a new course called Digital Society, and that will include students learning about how to identify fake news. They'll be learning about social media privacy, social media algorithms, and how to use the internet and how to be a great digital citizen overall. So it's quite interesting, the fact that the fake news phrase has popularized so much that it's been implemented into the education sector as well. I've spoken to a couple of schools here who talked about how they'll be implementing fake news studies into their courses. It'll include basically students being able to recognize what article or what video story they're watching and being able to tell who the source is. Is it true or is it just a rumor? Which I think is becoming important these days, considering the amount of information that is available on social media, and being having that ability to tell what's real and what's not.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because obviously this is going to be a subject that isn't going to go away. It's going to be a scourge that's not going to go away for quite some time. And therefore, the younger generations, the students of today, the citizens of tomorrow, will need to be more and more conscious of what is real and what is fake.
Yes, because, I mean, if you see all the rumors, even here in the UAE, that come on social media a couple of years ago, you know, there every year there was a rumor that Burj Khalifa was on fire, but really it was just fog around it. And so you really need to know how to identify who the information is coming from, where are they getting it, who's publishing it, in order for every individual to know that what they're... not to believe so easily what they're seeing or reading. And honestly, that's applicable not just to students, but sometimes a lot of the times to adults as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, as a journalist, as somebody who relies on and creates news for your trade and your profession, is it a scourge for you? Is it something that you and your team at Khalij Times are more and more conscious of these days, spotting the sources of news?
I think that's something very important to every journalist now, considering social media is in the play, because you have people creating fake accounts, you have people contacting you through anonymous social media profiles. You just don't know who you could be talking to.
Yeah.
So it's always best, from a journalist's point of view, is to meet someone in person. You know, you don't want to solely reply on social media chats or talking on the telephone anymore. It's always best to go meet someone in person, get primary information as well, because you don't know who you could be talking to behind that computer screen.
It is interesting. I suppose one of the biggest issues is going to be with stories that are, I know that, you know, we are, artificial intelligence or AI is going to play a significant part in all of our lives in years to come. We know that. But when we see the amount of impact that it's having in a sort of news sphere as well, where news stories are being generated by bots, and to a point now we're almost getting this disclaimer after a number of comments online and in social media and news forums that this is a robot generated response or whatever. It's finding where that news is coming from, a valid source, or also, I suppose, harnessing the power of AI and robots in order to source news as well.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. Worrying for us, considering there goes our jobs.
Boom.
But for media companies, implementing bots is obviously, probably shouldn't say this, but for my own benefit, but it's more financially beneficial in the long run, considering. But what these bots do is they collect information that's been stored into the systems and online, and they gather thousands of articles. From what I know is that they gather online information. But what they won't have that a human journalist can do is go out and get primary information. So a bot, an AI bot, can only limit itself to information that is already available and gathered onto the computers and in the system.
Yeah.
you can't have an AI bot, you know, with legs going out there and interviewing someone. I mean, unless it's Sophia, the humanoid robot, then it's a different story.
Yeah, it's a limited beat that she can work on, that's for sure. Let's get on to another of your stories, one that you've worked up a lot with the team at Khalij Times about. The sort of education sector now, not so much about specific schools, but more the struggles that people are going through, the struggles, the trials and tribulations people are finding in being able to afford school fees. It's having an impact on so many people's lives at the moment. And when people lose their jobs or they get into financial woes, who do they turn to? Do they turn to the school or do they turn to charities? Because you found foundations that are helping out.
Right. So I cover education at Khalij Times.
Yeah.
And then my colleague Ahmed Shaban has covered this specific story about the Sheikh Saud bin Sakkar Charitable Education Foundation that has come forward and helped rescue 5 expat children who were abandoned by their dad. So their single mother was raising them. But so obviously they were struggling with fees. So they covered the entire education costs for these children. But this is not the first time something like this has happened, where an education foundation has come forward for a lot of struggling families. Just last year, they helped about 400 expat children who could not pay their fees. And a lot of them do actually sit at home and miss out on a lot of classes just because their parents haven't paid the fees. And the big problem is that schools in Dubai, and as far as I know, are not allowed to humiliate kids just because their parents have not paid the fees. Mm-hmm. I have done this story repeatedly. Schools do send these kids home. The only thing schools are allowed to do according to KHJ, if parents do not pay the fees, is they are not allowed to get their results. Mm. They can sit in on classes and they can take the exams, but they will not get the results. Oh, this right. is according to KHDA. And we've done stories with headlines saying, don't humiliate kids if parents have not paid the fees.
A number of interesting articles in. I mean, you talked about the articles that you and your colleagues have worked up there in Khalij Times. There's also been a lot of reaction to the recent KHDA findings, the ranking systems as well. Obviously, that came out a couple of weeks ago. Invariably, when those lists and those findings come out, we always focus at those at the top, those that are outstanding, those that have seen the moves and the grades as well. But interesting that some news sources and media sources taking a look at the other end of the spectrum there, and those schools that are slowly making amends, those that have gone from weak to acceptable this year in the latest round of KHDA inspections after overcoming a variety of challenges. And I suppose these are a great example of where the KHDA inspections are a purpose for good, because it's helping schools like that recognise their shortcomings and therefore make amends in order to better the way they're teaching.
Right. And according to this new fee framework that has been launched by KHDA, that specific fee framework is actually trying to help schools improve, especially the ones that were rated weak and acceptable before. And those who do improve from weak or acceptable can actually increase their fees twice the education cost index. Mm. So one school, for example, the Sheikh Maktoum Pakistani school was rated weak for 7 years in a row. Mm. They were finally able to move to acceptable, and that means this year they were able to increase their fees by 4.14%, which is quite good. In the previous framework, it was if you're an outstanding school, you could increase your fees twice the education cost index, which was obviously a huge headache for parents, but now that is no longer the case.
Overall, I mean, we've had several years now to get used to the KHDA rankings, the KHDA inspections. Do you think they're having the required impact at the moment?
I mean, if you look at it from the school's perspective, you know, they say they're improving, considering KHDA gives very in-depth feedback of the areas they're lacking in. If you speak to parents, you know, they choose their school most of the times according to the rankings of the school. Mm. But sometimes, you know, they also have complaints about the fact that, hey, does the fee actually match what the school is offering, even though it's been ranked outstanding or very good or good? So when the new fee framework came out, I think a lot of the complaints that parents had was that don't make the fees structure according to what the school is ranked. Yeah. Because even though it is ranked outstanding, a school that's been rated very good may be still offering better education than an outstanding school. This is according to parents.
Let's wrap things up with our very special guest here this morning. We've been doing the paper review with the senior reporter from Khalij Times, Sawat Nasir. And we turn our attention to one final story with Sawat. This is this series you're doing, the Humans of the UAE series. Tell me more.
Right. So the video desk at our Khalij Times offices are doing a series called Humans of UAE, where we're covering the lives of your everyday Joe, your everyday person on video. And they've been doing quite well. A lot of them have actually gone viral. So this the latest one we've done is of a bus conductor who's been working here for a while now. She has never had a job before. She used to live in India with her husband and her kids. Then her husband got into an unfortunate accident, therefore could not work. They all moved to the UAE, and she has been working as a bus conductor ever since. And the sad part is she herself is a cancer survivor. Mm-hmm. So we cover these, we find regular people, and we basically cover their stories. It's a bit inspired, kind of like the Humans of New York series that has been going on in the U.S. as well. We did another video recently of a Pakistani biryani maker who serves one of the most famous biryanis here in Dubai, and it got millions of views in just a couple of days. You know, an ordinary story like that, a person you pass by every day, one of the most oldest restaurants, and all we did was capture them, tell their story, and boom, a lot of people do like watching these kind of videos and hearing about people you pass by every day but wouldn't look at twice. Yeah. But just eat their food, obviously. And then we covered another one, the perfume maker. This is the same one that Gwen Stefani had visited.
Okay, yeah.
We covered his story just, I think, a couple of days before she had gone to him. And we didn't know that it would go as viral as it did. He was a very interesting guy. My colleague Nilanjana has been in charge of the Humans of UAE series, and she's been doing a great job.
And they're all available on the website, are they?
They are all available on our website, khalijtimes.com, and on our social media pages. And so people can follow us and see all of these Humans of UAE series.
Loving it. Well, we'll give that a go. Sawat, really appreciate your time this morning. Thanks for joining us in our new studios. Like them?
Yeah, it's quite nice. I mean, I see I have a visual of the Burj Al Arab right in front of me. You can see trees moving in there with the wind.
Not a bad view.
Nice update.
Well, really appreciate it. Good to see you again. Our thanks to Sawat Nasir, senior reporter at Khalij Times, joining us for today's paper review.
This is Dubai Eye 103.8.